KBMW.
All right, here we go. Let the talk around Thursday begin. Janet Gageland, our favorite historian in.
Blew in, basically.
Yeah, a little breezy out there. I've been calling it breezy, and that's, you know, gift
probably
for
better than it was yesterday.
definitely. Well, what are we talking today? We've been doing front page news.
Well, we're hanging in there with the front page
news.
But we aren't getting those great stories about Missouri Bob and any of those people.
The colorful characters.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll happen later on.
It might.
But just to go back a little bit on the Meridian and the U.S. Highway 81, people need to remember that came from Fargo. You know, and then you went through Abber and then Dwight, and then you got to the Dwight Corner, is what it's called. And then you would make a left and head towards Wahpeton. And this was all part of Highway 81.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you got to Wahpeton, there was that curve. And the curve partially is still there, you know, where you go by Giants.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that curve then took you to which would be basically the south side of Econo Foods.
Okay.
And then if you were to go right at the, you know, then you'd get onto Highway 127 is what it's called now. But that was the connection to 81 to go south into South Dakota.
I vaguely remember something about a curve out there, too. That kind of dates me.
And then, when the interstate came in, 81 became a county road, and then they built Highway 13 because it was a four-lane. And then, like I said, 81 south to Fairmont became 127.
It's hard to imagine a time when 13 wasn't there, but yeah, there was that time.
Yeah, it's been several decades.
Incredible.
So anyway, just kind of finishing up that a little bit so people in their mind can figure out where 81 came in for Wahpeton.
Right.
You know. So then we've got some other front page news. We've talked before about the circus monument, you know, that is at Riverside Cemetery.
Out south, yes.
Yeah, and the two circus workers who died by a lightning strike in 1897. So ever since then, probably not in recent years, but in 1925, there was a circus in town, and it was the Lee Brothers show. And so they went to that cemetery, and they held a little service there. According to the newspaper, it says, when a circus man dies, he may not be unremembered except by those who worked with him. But the story of his death is learned by all circuses. So they just continue to tell the story of, you know, their people or comrades. And, the circus people remember as they hope to be remembered when they too are gone. So they went out there and they took their circus people and they relived the story. They put flowers at the poles that mark the gravesite.
So it really is a community.
Yeah.
With circus people.
Well, sure. They're according to this, they said that there are a lot of them are nomad type people. They are homeless, you know, but that doesn't mean they don't want a home.
Sure.
It's just that that's how it is right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's fascinating.
I think that's nice. This one, this fellow came to Wahpeton and he did an artwork, not with a paintbrush, but with bullets.
Bullets.
Yes.
Okay.
So he would stand about 20 feet away from a tin canvas. He drew on a tin canvas, and he would stand about 20 feet away. And I don't know anything about rifles, but he had a .22 Winchester automatic.
Okay.
Now, so I'm thinking that's the kind of gun that you would probably take out to an area and shoot tin cans with.
Sure.
You know, not very powerful, but I could be wrong. Anyway, so he would draw on that tin, and he sometimes would draw the portrait of Uncle Sam. And then he would stand back sit on the ground that 20 feet away, and he would shoot at that outline.
He would shoot the painting?
Yes.
Yeah.
With little 22 shells.
Wow.
It would take about 350 of them to complete the outline of Uncle Sam.
But he could trace that out. He was that good of a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right. Took him about 4 minutes only. So I think he was kind of a sharpshooter. About I think the gun would probably hold about 14 to 20 rounds, depending if it was long or short. Now, this is my research, but I could be way off.
Yeah.
So anyway, 14 to 20 rounds, depending if it was a long or short shell bullet. But
that is amazing.
I know. I thought that, too. I'm like, wow. So this would draw a lot of people.
I would think. Yeah, I'd go to see it.
Yeah, I think so. And then he did exhibitions, you know, every, you know, different places. But he was very well known. And he was a remarkable shot.
Yeah,
according to that.
And a guy you didn't want to make angry.
Yeah, and he would do an Indian chief, but that was only 185 bullets. And he could do that one in 3 minutes. And I don't know who was timing him, but he had an assistant, and the assistant would load the next rifle. And mm-hmm. so when he would get those shots off, then the next one was ready, and then to keep going. But if you only got, let's say, 20 rounds per rifle, I mean, you'd have to be reloading very constantly.
Yeah, sure.
To get 350 shots off.
That is truly amazing.
Right. And so how big would that hole be? I don't know, maybe half an inch.
What a crazy, jump in here, Tom Schmaltz. Here.
About pencil size or a little smaller.
Okay.
Okay.
So it was the kind of...
you shoot tin cans, prairie dogs, whatever.
Right.
With it. First gun most children learn to shoot on.
Okay.
22, yes. Well, I had a 410. I had a rabbit gun when I was younger.
I don't know the difference.
I knew he'd get in on this. I just
don't think that 22 had much of a kick to it, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. So you probably didn't land backwards.
No, but not much of a recoil.
No. So he sat in the ground and he shot.
Incredible.
Yeah, okay. So in the 20s, when World War I ended, the government said, well, let's take some of the spoils of the war back to the United States. So they shipped in these 250 millimeter like cannons. They have a 9-inch opening.
Okay.
And so they're huge, I mean, as far as the size.
Yeah.
And then they would shoot a distance of probably about 100 yards.
Very small barrel on this. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like of a regular cannon.
They were very portable by the Germans. And so the government had these, and they're like, okay, we're going to give 10 of them to 10 counties in Richland or in North Dakota if they want them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pay for the, you know, packing and all that, but you have to pay for the freight to get it there.
Okay.
How much would that weigh?
I'm guessing a ton looking at these. Yeah.
And would have to come, of course, by rail. But... So they would send it out there, and people would probably put them on their courthouse grounds, you know, just
right.
And maybe some other military cemetery or something. But I could not find anyone in the state of North Dakota who took one. They were offered, but they didn't have the money for the freight.
They're interesting looking little cannons.
Yes.
I do mean little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what they could do was immense. I did find one in Two Harbors, Minnesota, that they brought in, and it's part of a military display that they have. And if you didn't want the big cannon thing, you could get machine guns, rifles, helmets, and other small trophies.
Take your choice.
Captured by the Yanks.
Right.
So there you go. From a Winchester 22 to a cannon.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Janet, look, we're out of time.
I
can talk all morning about this stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, next week, we're doing more front page news?
Yes, if I'm not serving on the jury.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know.
I will do that.
Janet Gageland in Talking Wahpeton History. Like we do every Thursday here at the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450, KBMW. Good morning.
Low, 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 low.